We'll move to question time, and I will call Senator Patterson. Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Home Affairs, Senator Watt. During the High Court proceedings on the NZYQ case on the 2nd of June this year, Justice Gleeson strongly signalled that the court may rule against indefinite detention, stating, "It seemed to me that I ought not let this directions hearing go past without acknowledging that the purpose of his detention is for removal, and yet it seems that no, on one view of the facts, capacity for removal is likely diminishing from very little to none. So I draw that to your attention as a factual matter that may ultimately be relevant," and other comments of a similar nature. Why did the government not immediately prepare legislation in anticipation of this likely contingency, instead of waiting until dangerous criminals had already been released into the community?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Patterson. I am aware of those remarks that were made by Justice Gleeson in the High Court. I'm also aware of some remarks that Senator Patterson made in this chamber the other day when, while Senator Wong was answering a question, Senator Patterson interjected and made the point that the High Court's ruling overturned 20 years of precedent. So it seems that at the time, at least, Senator Patterson made those interjections the other day, he was aware that there had been a High Court decision in place with a clear ruling on this matter of law for 20 years, and that the decision that ultimately was received by the High Court, the full bench of the High Court, overturned that 20 years of precedence. So I think for Senator Patterson to come in now and pretend that he had a crystal ball, that this decision was going to end up the way it did, is completely disingenuous and goes against the comments that he made earlier in the week. Of course, in addition to that, what we also know is that the opposition leader, Mr Dutton, knew that this was an issue when he was the Minister for Home Affairs for a number of years, and he didn't do anything to address the issue either. Our urgent legislation that we have introduced today—
Minister Watt? Senator Patterson.
Thank you, Madam President. On direct relevance, the question was about comments that Justice Gleeson made in June this year. Last time I checked, Peter Dutton wasn't in government in June this year. You were.
Thank you, Senator Patterson. The minister is being relevant to your question. Minister Watt, please continue.
It's interesting that the opposition is so defensive of Mr Dutton's record as the Home Affairs Minister. Of course, he was also the Home Affairs Minister who presided over a completely broken migration system that was exposed
Minister
by the
Watt,
Nixon report.
Please resume your seat. Senator Birmingham.
President, a point of order on direct relevance, of which the minister is clearly not being directly relevant to the specifics of the question Senator Patterson asked. But also, President, an urging for you to engage more frequently when a minister is so directly pivoting to comment on the opposition or on matters that are extraneous to the specifics of the question, and to more proactively please draw the minister back to the question that has been asked.
Senator Birmingham, I think I do respond, and I was about to respond to Minister Watt, and I saw you stand, so I took your point of order. Minister Watt, I will refer you back to the question.
Thank you, President. It's just been drawn to my attention that, in fact, Senator Patterson is incorrectly misrepresenting the remarks of Justice Gleeson as well. Justice Gleeson's comments in June did not indicate the likely judgment of the High Court. What she said was, quote, "In a sense, what you seem to be saying is that his position is utterly hopeless. That is nothing that could be done to ready him for removal." That is far from indicating that the High Court full bench was going to make the decision that it ended up making. But notwithstanding that, we have now produced urgent legislation within a very short amount of time, and we invite the opposition to work with us to get it done.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator Patterson, first supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. When did the government first become aware that penalties for breaches of visa conditions by this cohort would be unenforceable, given the ultimate consequence of a breach is detention, which was just ruled unconstitutional by the High Court?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Patterson. What matters here is that the government is taking action to fix this problem. What matters here? Well, I barely started answering the question.
Thank you. Senator Patterson?
Madam President, on direct relevance, the minister is right. He's barely started answering the question, but indicated in his first few words he's not even going to attempt to engage in the question, which is, when did the government first become aware?
Thank you, Senator Patterson. The minister had just got to his feet. You have reminded him of the question. Minister Watt, please continue.
Well, as I say, President, The government first became aware of the High Court's decision and the implications that flowed from it when the High Court delivered its decision. And as I say, and I've said before, they haven't delivered their reasons yet. But notwithstanding that, we have moved expeditiously to fix this issue. We've invited the opposition to help with this, but all they've continued to do all week is play politics with the issue. So what we've seen from Mr Dutton in usual form is to play politics, try to divide people, rather than actually work constructively with the government to try to find a solution. We know that is the way he operates. We know that is the way the coalition operates, rather than actually working constructively to deal with a High Court decision that overturned 20 years of precedent and that now needs to be fixed, and we're committed
to
fixing it.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator Patterson, second supplementary.
Thank you, Madam President. When did the government first direct the Office of Parliamentary Counsel to draft legislation to address the serious risk to community safety which follow from the High Court's ruling?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. Well, I've personally heard both Minister Giles and Minister O'Neill say this week that the legal implications of this decision were being considered before a decision came down. There were contingency plans being developed, and that's what led, for instance, to us imposing a number of conditions on the people that were released into the community extremely quickly, as soon as they were released into the community. Things like reporting to police, things like avoiding...
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Patterson.
Madam President, do I really need to make a point of order on direct relevance here? I asked about the Office of Parliamentary Counsel. The minister has not mentioned those words or when the advice was first given to them.
Thank you, Senator Patterson. Minister Wong?
The question goes to the drafting of legislation. The minister's first sentence went to the answers that have been given by the relevant ministers in the other place on that topic. So I submit his answer is clearly relevant. If the opposition doesn't want to hear about the other measures for community safety, I think that says something about their political motives.
Thank you, Senator. Minister Wong. Senator Patterson, I believe the minister is being relevant. I will, however, listen to the remainder of his answer, and if he strays, I'll draw him back to the question. Minister Watt.
As I say, President, the government has now introduced legislation to deal with this emerging issue. We have sought to work with the opposition to have that legislation passed. And Mr Dutton, Senator Patterson and every member of the coalition has a decision to make. Are they going to continue playing politics on this matter?
I will draw you back to the question.
Yep. Are they going to continue playing politics or work with us to make communities safer?
Senator Grogan.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Health, Senator Gallagher. The Albanese Labor government made a commitment to the Australian people that it would strengthen Medicare so that Australians can access medical care whenever they need it. Could the Minister please update the Senate on the delivery of this critical commitment and how it is supporting Australians at a time of increased cost of living pressures?
Minister Gallagher.
Thank you very much, President. I thank Senator Grogan for the question and for her focus on health care and Medicare, which is something that I know every Australian holds dear to their heart. We went to the election promising we would make it easier and cheaper to see a doctor, and we are delivering on that promise with the biggest investment in bulk billing in the 40-year history of Medicare. It will make it easier for more than 11 million Australians to see a bulk billing doctor. Because we know that after a decade of cuts and neglect to Medicare under the former government, bulk billing rates declined sharply. Because of our government's actions, it will be easier to find a bulk billing doctor for 5 million children and their families and 7 million pensioners and other concession card holders. Together, these patients account for around 3 out of the 5 visits to general practice. In our major cities, a doctor will get 34% more for a standard bulk billed consultation of under 20 minutes, taking the Medicare payment for eligible patients to over $60. In regional and rural Australia, a doctor will get around 50% more for the same visit, taking the Medicare payment to between $70 and $80, just over $80, depending on location. Doctors themselves have called this a game changer. We've heard from doctors across the country that this will allow them to bulk bill their patients. Whether a family in Brisbane, a pensioner in Geraldton, a concession card holder in the Hunter Valley will all get bulk bill care thanks to this multi-billion dollar investment. All they'll need to do is show their Medicare card. And this is part of our government's commitment to strengthen Medicare.
Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat.
All that.
Thank you, Senator Rustin. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. This is all part of our government's commitment to strengthen Medicare and address the cost of living crunch.
Senator Grogan's first supplementary.
Thank you to the minister for that response. It is a truly significant leap forward. I am also aware of the important role that urgent care clinics are playing in relieving demands on our hospital system. Could the minister please provide an update on the rollout of the urgent care clinics?
Thank you, Senator Grogan. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President. And yes, I can. Thank you, Senator Grogan. Because these urgent care clinics are already proving to be a massive success. Taking pressure off emergency departments, open 7 days a week, extended hours, they're bulk billed, and all patients need is their Medicare card. A total of 38 are open out of 58. There's been more than 60,000 presentations to Medicare urgent care clinics. Across the country, this represents an estimated potential saving to public hospital EDs of over $15.8 million in patient episodes. Across the country, nearly a third of patients have been under 15 years of age. Nearly a third of visits have taken place on weekends, and on weekdays, more than one in five visits have taken place after 6 o'clock. Urgent care clinics are already in their early days serving local communities across Australia, and they're all going to be open by the end of this year.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Grogan, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. Can the Minister please further outline the impact recent changes to bulk billing are having on improving the access to healthcare for millions of Australians as part of the government's commitment to strengthening Medicare?
Minister Gallagher.
Oh, thank you. It is interesting that Senator Rustin has a lot to say about Medicare now. It's a shame she didn't have as much to say about it when they were actually in government and we are dealing with the consequences, Madam President, of their failure to invest in Medicare. A lot of opinions now, not so many opinions when in government, didn't do a thing other than drive primary health care into the crisis position that we inherited, that we are now turning around with the help of the GP workforce.
Rustin,
the tripling of
the
bulk billing incentive, the biggest investment in bulk billing in the history of Medicare, is already making a difference. Dr. Michael Clements, a GP from Magnetic Island, has said, "Thank you very much for tripling of the bulk billing incentive. It has made a difference, and we've actually returned from private billing children and pensioners to bulk billing them because it's a significant difference." Now, we understand those opposite hate Medicare. They hate bulk billing. They hate strengthening Medicare. But this is something this government takes seriously.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Dean Smith.
Thank you very much, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Treasurer, Senator Gallagher. On Tuesday, in response to a question from Senator McGrath, you said that in many countries, inflation peaked higher than it did in Australia. You went on to say, "So it would make sense that our return to inflation to a target range will be later than in those other countries." Minister, why is inflation staying higher for longer in Australia than in countries where it hit an even higher peak?
Thank you, Senator Smith. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, the point I made earlier in the week is the correct point, that the inflation challenge arrived in this country later than it did in other similar economies around the world. Now, obviously, when your inflation challenge is going along the trajectory that we have seen in this country, it will take time to come down. And that's what we've seen in other countries as well, Senator Smith. That is what happens. And in many of those countries, it peaked higher than it peaked here. And it is tapering off now, as it is here in Australia. So that is that. Well, I'm sorry if you don't accept the data, but that is what the data shows. Now, what we have seen, and the responsibility the government has, is to deal with this inflation challenge that we inherited from the failure of your government to make the necessary investments, in particularly in the productive side of the economy, but also in areas like the energy transition and others, where you failed to address them. We are now addressing them, and we are ensuring that the decisions we take don't add to the inflation challenge in the economy. And that has been supported, as much as you don't like to admit it, by the Reserve Bank governor, by the new governor, by the Treasury Secretary, by the ABS in the data that they have provided in the monthly inflation figures, where we've seen that the decisions that this government took to put downward pressure on inflation, despite your opposition to it, have actually taken 0.5% off CPI. That is the result of the decisions that this government has taken. And we're doing that. We're repairing the budget and we're investing in the productive side of the economy, dealing with housing, skills and the energy transition all at the same time.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Smith, first supplementary.
Thank you very much. Speaking of governors of the Reserve Bank, the former governor of the Reserve Bank, Mr Lowe, told Senate Estimates all the evidence is that if inflation stays too high for too long, expectations adjust and that ultimately leads to higher interest rates and more unemployment. Minister, with even the government admitting that inflation is now staying higher for longer in Australia, are you failing the former RBA governor's test, with Australians now having to endure higher interest rates and risking
thank
more
you,
unemployment?
Thank you, Senator Smith. Question. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. The language I used, and it seems to have confused those opposite, has been language that I have used for some time in this place, and indeed for the Treasurer. And I would draw your attention to the RBA's recent statement on monetary policy, where they have updated their forecasts on CPI, and they remain largely in line with the forecasts that we released as part of our budget in May. And I know it really kills those opposite, but we have words from the new Reserve Bank Governor saying that the decisions that we are taking are good and enough in terms of our fiscal strategy. Yes, I know you didn't like that at Estimates, but that is what they said. We've got the Treasury Secretary's evidence. We've got the Treasury Secretary's evidence, and we've got the evidence coming directly out of the ABS.
Thank you, Minister Gallagher. Senator Cox.
Question to the Minister representing the Minister for—
I beg your pardon, Senator Cox. I'm way ahead of myself. Sorry, Senator Smith. Second supplementary.
Great. Thank you very much. The Economist has published data showing that inflation in Australia was more entrenched than the United Kingdom, Germany, Canada, the United States, France, Italy, Spain, South Korea and Japan. OEC data shows real household income has fallen faster in Australia over the last year of the Labor government than in any other advanced economy.
Thank you, Senator Smith. The time for answering has expired. Minister Gallagher.
No question. Well, the government has a plan. You just choose to ignore it. You just choose to ignore it and oppose it at the same time and then criticise us. So that's your plan, is ignore, oppose, criticise. Meanwhile,
Smith, you've asked your question.
Rolling out cost of living relief, getting the budget in much better shape and investing in energy, skills and housing. And indeed, you quote from The Economist. How about I quote from the IMF? The government has saved the bulk of the recent revenue windfalls, indicating a desire to maintain a fiscal stance supporting of reducing inflation and pursue prudent fiscal policies. So, did you see that? And you just put that in the outbox, didn't you? Better not use that. That's not
Senator
useful.
Senator Smith.
So we've got a plan. We're rolling out the plan. The plan is working. The ABS data shows just how our plan is working, how much in relation to childcare costs, in relation to electricity.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cox will go again.
Thanks, President. I rise to ask the question to the Minister representing the Minister for Resources, Minister Farrell. Right across this country, sacred sites—
Senator Cox, Minister Farrell has a leave of absence.
Who's taking his questions? Senator Watt? Oh, draw the lucky straw today.
Thank you, Minister Wong.
Minister Watt.
Your question to Minister Watt? Yes.
Right across the country, sacred sites are under threat from resources companies, including the Tiwi Islands and Murujuga in my home state of Western Australia. These sites hold knowledge and stories that are tens of thousands of years old. Murujuga holds some of the most ancient rock art in the world, and much of it has been destroyed, and the current pipeline of the Barossa project north of the Tiwi Islands will impact sacred burial sites and songlines. and indeed the first point of contact for humans on this continent. My question, Minister, is what is your government doing to protect First Nations cultural heritage instead of trying to justify it for corporate profit? And what are you doing to protect our precious ecosystems and sacred places?
Thank you, Senator Cox. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Cox. I will do my best to represent Senator Farrell, who's representing Minister King. Obviously, this government takes the matters that you've raised, Senator Cox, very seriously, and we absolutely respect First Nations cultural heritage right across our country. And these are important matters that need to be considered in the context of any proposed resource development, whether it be in the Northern Territory or anywhere else. You would be familiar, Senator Cox, that the government does have a process underway around the amendments to and reconsideration of cultural heritage legislation. That matter actually is being led by Minister Plibersek, as I understand it. And I'm happy to provide you with some further information about where that process is up to, but the point remains that we do need to get to a place in Australia where important cultural heritage sites for our First Nations people are respected. Obviously, our government does also support resource developments going ahead and other projects that are job creating and produce economic development, including for First Nations communities. But those projects need to proceed in a way that does respect First Nations cultural heritage. A lot of this debate has, of course, been prompted by the terrible scenes that we saw involving Juukan Gorge, which I think gave all Australians and resource companies some pause for thought about the interaction between those types of developments and projects and First Nations heritage. Happy to provide you with some further information on that as it comes to hand.
Minister Wong.
Thank you. Senator, President, through you, I am advised that, as Senator Watt just indicated, this question probably ought to have been directed to me as the Minister representing the Minister for the Environment. If the Senator wishes to continue, otherwise, can I just indicate the opposition would give leave? The government would give leave. I had a lot of years. The government would give leave for the supplementary to come to me if it would be of any assistance.
Senator Cox, first supplementary.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Wong. I will direct my questions to you. My first supplementary is the fact of the matter is that this government and successive governments have allowed and continue to allow for sacred sites to be destroyed for the sake of the resources industry. Will this government step in and ensure that the resources industry is not allowed to destroy sacred sites such as those on the Tiwi Islands and Murujuga, simply so they can line their pockets and destroy this climate?
Thank you, Senator Watt. Minister Wong.
Thank you, President. We have a legislative or regulatory framework in place that is intended to assure the protection of Indigenous cultural heritage. However, Senator, you are right to point to the ways that the examples of particular companies not acting in accordance with that regulatory framework, and the most egregious example of that is, of course, Juukan Gorge, where I know a Senate committee did, or a parliamentary committee did, make very clear representations about the importance of strengthening Commonwealth cultural heritage protection. So, following the destruction of Juukan Gorge, that was agreed. The Minister has outlined a consultation process for that.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Cox, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. I want to acknowledge some of the Tiwi Island traditional owners that are in the gallery here today. Their traditional owners have been in court multiple times now fighting the Barossa gas field project in the Northern Territory. These determinations have largely shown how the legislative framework is not designed to account for First Nations cultural heritage, especially when it's underwater or intangible. How is your government, Senator, going to address this?
Minister Wong.
Well, can I welcome the representatives, community representatives and elders here today. Can I say that we are aware of court proceedings in relation to the Barossa project? You would understand, Senator, just as I understand why you're asking me the question, you would understand that as the matter remains before the courts, the government and, in fact, the Senate, as a general rule, will not be commenting on matters before the federal court. I would note that the federal government is not part of these proceedings. It's not party to these proceedings.
Order.
I'm sorry?
Order.
Well, there is a principle. Well, there's two points. Again, we're not a party to these proceedings. Secondly, well, I'm advised, and I will correct the record if I am wrong, but I'm advised that we are not a part. The government of Australia is the Commonwealth of Australia is not a party
to
these proceedings.
Thank you, Senator Wong. The time for answering has expired. Senator Sheldon.
My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government, Senator Watt. I refer to the Albanese Labor Government's commitment to reform the way Commonwealth funds infrastructure and undo a decade of bad decisions. What did the infrastructure review released by the Minister today find?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Sheldon. I know Senator Sheldon, along with all senators on this side of the chamber, understand the importance of infrastructure to local communities, as well as knowing how important it is that Australians are able to trust the promises of their government. And as we all know, the previous government left the infrastructure investment pipeline in a complete mess. And the review Minister King released today makes that clear. And I'm not surprised that, of all people, Senator McKenzie might have to say something about this. Of course, the master of the spreadsheet sitting over there with a green highlighter out there colouring up the National Party projects, every now and then a Liberal Party project, but mostly National Party projects. So I know today is an embarrassing day for Senator McKenzie and all members of the National Party.
Minister Watt, please review your seat. Senator Birmingham.
On a point of order, and indeed I think Senator Colbeck just nailed it, that he's not even being relevant to the question he was asked as a Dixer. But of course, he is also seeking to impugn the senator and imply motives. And Senator Watt should withdraw.
Senator Watt?
They are a bit toey about colour-coded spreadsheets. As we all know, the previous government left the infrastructure investment pipeline.
I just assumed I wouldn't have to repeat Senator Birmingham's request for you to withdraw, but my apologies, I should have. Senator Wong.
Thank you, President. I apologise to the chamber. I was not listening with all of my full attention, but I would be grateful if you could be clear, at least across the table, with what words you are asking him to withdraw.
Well, Senator Wong, it is my habit to specifically request for personal reflections never to be repeated, and I really don't want to diverge from that. Senator Watt usually withdraws. There was, I think it was close, but in the interests of a calm chamber, I would ask that the comments be withdrawn.
Some of the evidence which was presented to the Senate about what occurred in relation to that program, including the coloured quota spreadsheets, that's on the public record.
No, there was a reference to Senator McKenzie. In the interests of the calmness of the chamber, I would ask Senator Watt to withdraw.
Thank you,
Senator Watt.
The review that Minister King released today found a pipeline of infrastructure inherited from the coalition that was jam-packed with backed-up projects that were announced without the supports of states or territories, poorly scoped, underfunded at the outset, or designed simply to win votes. The infrastructure program was spiralling out of control under the coalition, having blown out from 150 to almost 800 projects. And it's become clear that the previous government was addicted to announcements, colour-coded spreadsheets and neglected the hard work of building real infrastructure. And while they may have had
Minister Watt, please review my seat. Senator Rennick.
Point of order, Chair. I'm sick and tired of the reference to colour-coded
spreadsheets. Thank you, Senator Rennick. That is not...
As an accountant...
That is not...
As an...
Senator Rennick. Senator Rennick, resume your seat. Senator Rennick, order across the chamber. Order. 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 Senator Rennick, I am rather surprised because you do normally sit when asked to, and I would remind you that when I require you to sit, you sit. Minister Watt, please continue.
Yes, as Senator Wong has pointed out, it was a pretty uncomfortable episode for all Australians to have a government led by colour-coded spreadsheets, and even now they still boast about it. The Coalition's legacy and the path they set for this nation was $33 billion in cost blowouts and an inability to add any new infrastructure projects to the pipeline until the year 2033. This is a breathtaking indictment on the Liberals' and Nationals' economic management and their failure to genuinely deliver for our communities. That's the Coalition's legacy. Under them, we would have had no new infrastructure projects until 2033.
Senator Sheldon, first supplementary.
Good, thanks. Under the Liberals and Nationals, the $120 billion investment pipeline was left in a total mess. As you outlined, Minister, underfunding, poorly prepared, out of control, cost blowouts. How's the Albanese Labor government demonstrating its commitment to nation-building infrastructure and bring certainty to the infrastructure sector?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Well, what we'll be doing is implementing the recommendations of this independent review, and that's because, in the words of the reviewers, quote, there are projects in the infrastructure investment pipeline that do not demonstrate merit, lack any national strategic rationale, and do not meet the Australian government's national investment priorities. What a great investment program. What a great government you were. What great economic managers you were. Well, unlike the Coalition, we will be investing in projects that enhance productivity by removing traffic bottlenecks and build resilience in our supply chains. We are committed to a better approach, focusing on delivering nationally significant infrastructure that align with our broader national priorities in housing and critical minerals. We'll be investing in projects, as I say, that remove traffic bottlenecks and build resilience in our supply chains, projects that improve the livability of our cities and regions we call home, and projects that contribute to sustainability and reduce our emissions like public transport. We're also reshaping how we fund projects to ensure
a
genuine partnership with the states.
The time for answering has expired. Senator Sheldon, second supplementary.
Under the Liberals and Nationals, the number of infrastructure projects in the pipeline blew out from 150 to 800. But as always, delivery was a secondary consideration. How will the infrastructure review and its outcome allow the government to invest more in the projects that matter?
Thank you, Senator Sheldon. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Stirl. They are great questions. And this review and the implementation of it will have real benefits for Australians, allowing our government to end the waste and rorts that we saw under the Coalition and invest more in the projects that matter. Over the next 10 years, more than 400 individual ongoing projects are expected to be completed or substantially developed, including the North-South Corridor in Adelaide, where we have proposed an additional $2.7 billion in addition to the funding that was already committed. Logan and Gold Coast Faster Rail, where we've proposed an additional $1.8 billion on top of what we've already committed.
Senator McKenzie.
The M1 Pacific Motorway extension to Raymond Terrace through the Hunter, where works on the next section will start imminently, and Metronet in Western Australia, where we've proposed an additional $1 billion. Now, those opposite may claim there are cuts, while at the same time saying we should cut in government spending, but you wouldn't want to look for consistency. They're making it up. We're not taking a single cent out of the infrastructure investment of the federal government.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell.
Thank you, President. My question is for the Minister representing the Minister for Health and Aged Care, Senator Gallagher. The government's 60-day dispensing policy began on September 1st. Since then, several small pharmacies in Tasmania have reduced their opening hours and reduced staff hours. Launceston's only late-night pharmacy now shuts at 8 p.m. instead of 10 p.m. One regional pharmacy chose not to put on a new pharmacist or take on a new trainee because they couldn't afford it. Does the government recognise their 60-day dispensing policy, while helping to reduce costs for patients, has hurt some small pharmacies?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, President, and I thank Senator Tyrrell for her question and her engagement, I think, on this issue for a long period of time. I would say that from the data that the government has been looking at, we're still seeing quite a lot of investment continuing to come into the pharmacy sector. There, in the 5 months since we've announced the policies, there's been 48 applications to the government to open
Senator
new
Rustin.
Pharmacies, 50% more than we received in the same
Senator
period last
Rustin.
Year. In the first month of the policy, another 5 applications to open new pharmacies were received, and 5 applications were approved. There are
Senator Ruston.
Yeah.
Minister,
do you have a question? Do you have a question?
Please, Minister Gallagher.
Do you have a question?
Minister Gallagher, I have Senator Wong on her feet. Senator Wong.
Senator Ruston has been called 3 times and she's still interjecting now. As you're talking, President, she is still interrupting.
Thank you, Minister Wong. Senator Ruston, I called you three times. Senator Ruston, seriously, that is disrespectful. I called you 3 times. I would ask for silence across the chamber. Minister Gallagher, please continue.
Thank you very much. Obviously, individual businesses will make decisions around their operating arrangements, and I'm happy, and I'm sure the Minister for Health would be happy to engage with you on the particular pharmacies you raise in Tasmania. We have sought to address some of the concerns that were raised around regional pharmacies in particular, and the decision we took will provide around 400,000 to pharmacies from our largest rural towns to our most remote communities to provide more services to more Australians in the way that they would operate now. And we are also continuing to work with the pharmacy sector about other opportunities there are to increase the services that they provide, including through negotiations for the next replacement agreement. But I am happy to see if there's anything further I can provide the Senator in relation to the Tasmanian specific elements of her question.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Tyrrell, first supplementary.
Thank you, President and Senator. Many pharmacies in remote areas aren't eligible for the regional pharmacy transition payments this year because they don't dispense enough scripts. This doesn't make a lot of sense. You're not going to dispense 45,000 scripts a year in a town with a population of 900. Will the government admit that announcements like the transition payments were more about political spin and don't do enough to help regional pharmacies?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Well, the answer to that question is no, not at all. And the decision we took was to support pharmacies, particularly those in regional and rural areas, with this change, but at the same time accept that this is a genuine cost of living measure for Australian households, particularly those that rely on regular medication, to save them from paying unnecessary costs associated with managing their illness. And I know that there will be many people. 200,000 scripts have been issued for 60 days in the first month of operation. So there are many individuals who will have benefited from that arrangement in terms of the money that they have to provide. But it was also always cost of living relief for individuals and households, but it was always, as it was no save to the budget, the extra investment went into addressing some of the concerns that
pharmacy
had raised.
Thank you, Minister. The time for answering has expired. Senator Tyrrell, second supplementary.
Thank you, President. The Health Minister says between the maintenance allowance and the transition allowance, the average reduction in dispensing revenue will be offset this financial year. But for one pharmacy in Tasmania, this will barely cover a third of the loss from 60-day dispensing. What do you have to say to that pharmacy, her name's Judy, by the way, who are doing everything they can stay to afloat but feel completely let down by their government?
Thank you, Senator Tyrrell. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you. Well, I would say to that pharmacist that the government is wanting to work with pharmacies to ensure and look at extra services that can be provided in terms of the work that they do, and we are talking to the Pharmacy Guild and others through that, through the Community Pharmacy Agreement, that we want to support the work of pharmacies, but we don't believe that should come at the cost or the hip pocket of Australians who are struggling to afford to pay
Senator
their
Ruston.
Medicines. That is the point of the reform. And Senator Ruston, who continues to ignore your direction, President, wants to have it both ways, wants to pretend that they support the cost of living measure and then beat the government up on every other aspect.
Senator
it's
Ruston.
So, as usual, hypocritical.
Minister Gallagher, please resume your seat. Minister Wong.
I again raise that Senator Rustin, despite being called by you on numerous occasions, has not stopped interjecting. Now, there are provisions in the standing orders to deal with a persistent and willful obstruction of the business of the Senate. I ask you, and she's still doing it.
Yeah.
And she's still doing it.
Seriously.
We understand interjections are a part of this place, but again. Unable to stop. No, she's talking to me, actually.
Order. Order.
I would ask you to remind her of the standing order. She is a senior member of the opposition. No, I'm not the president. I'm addressing the president. I'm
order.
Addressing the president.
Senator Henderson.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So, senators, during question time, I am reluctant to sit either the person asking the question or the minister down while I restore order. That is why I often name senators. I would expect, if I name a senator, that you stop the interjections. Senator Rustin, I have called you at least five times, and I called you twice just then. I would ask that you stop the interjections, and the minister is to be heard in silence. Minister Gallagher.
Thank you, and I've undertaken on the specific Tasmanian parts of the question to come back to the senator directly.
Thank you, Minister. Senator McKenzie.
Thank you very much. My question is to the minister representing the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport and Regional Development, Senator Watt. After 200 days of the Albanese government's so-called short, sharp 90-day review, Labor has taken the axe to 50 major infrastructure projects and thrown another 252 projects into uncertainty. Major projects cancelled by Labor include the M7 to M12 interchange in New South Wales, the Frankston to Baxter rail upgrade in Victoria, and the Mooloolah River interchange in Queensland, as well as projects to remove heavy vehicles from the main streets of Harndorf and Pinjarra. Minister, with the government swinging the axe today on these important projects, what is the exact dollar figure of the cuts to the infrastructure investment pipeline across each year of the forward estimates?
Thank you, Senator McKenzie. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. I could give a very short answer, and the answer would be zero, because the government has maintained every single dollar of the $120 billion that was contained in the infrastructure investment program that we inherited from the coalition.
Yeah.
Of course, the problem is that that infrastructure program, developed by Senator McKenzie and her colleagues, with their colour-coded spreadsheets, had blown out by $33 billion. An infrastructure program that had blown out from 150 projects to over 800. Completely unable to be delivered. No funding.
Senator McKenzie.
No skilled labour. In some cases, no business plans. And certainly no hope whatsoever of being delivered. And it's been very interesting this week hearing the sort of different messages coming out of the Liberals and the Nationals, because most of the time we hear from the Liberals that we need to cut funding to bring inflation under control. But on the other hand, we have the Nationals and some Liberals saying, oh, no, spend more money on infrastructure. I noticed this morning, for instance, Senator Bragg, who we know is auditioning for the role of Shadow Assistant Treasurer, along with half the other backbench, Senator Bragg tweeted that Australian inflation is worse than other economies because Labor isn't running a contractionary budget.
Senator Watt, I am going to draw you back to Senator McKenzie's question.
So, Senator Bragg and his colleagues in the Liberal Party want a contractionary budget. Senator McKenzie and her colleagues want us to spend more money on
Minister
infrastructure.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator McKenzie.
Direct relevance. You also instructed the minister back to the forward estimates profiling, and I would appreciate
Senator McKenzie, to be fair, I directed the minister to the whole of your question, and I will remind him once again. Senator McAllister?
I was simply going to make the point of order to observe that Senator McKenzie's question did go to budget matters.
Senator McKenzie, as you would have heard, I completely addressed Senator McKenzie's point of order. Minister Watt, I will draw you back to the question. Thank you.
So, as I say, President, The government is preserving every single dollar of the $120 billion infrastructure program that we inherited. And what we're actually doing in the process is delivering more money for a number of states to deliver more infrastructure. My home state of Queensland, for example, we are providing more than $2 billion extra funding for infrastructure projects compared to what was already provided for. And that will allow us to deliver a number of projects that didn't have the funding that the Coalition pretended to provide.
Thank you, Minister. Senator Mackenzie, first supplementary.
Labor has been dragged kicking and screaming to reveal the full list of projects to be axed, but they are still failing to hand over the list of delayed projects, leaving local councils, communities, contractors and construction workers in the dark on whether their projects will go ahead. When will you reveal the details of what your cuts mean to project timeframes, or will these, like the 50 projects that got the axe, mean more broken promises? Because you didn't answer
Senator
the forward
McKenzie,
estimates
the
question.
The time for asking has expired. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President. Well, Senator Mackenzie, I'm not sure what you were doing at around 10 o'clock this morning, but at 10 o'clock this morning, Catherine King, the Infrastructure Minister, delivered a press conference where she actually went through this entire issue in detail. The projects that are proceeding, the projects that are being delayed, the projects that have no hope whatsoever of being delivered. And as I say, just to take Queensland as one example, we are providing more than $2 billion extra funding in infrastructure to deliver a range of projects, Brisbane to the Gold Coast Rail, Rockhampton Ring Road, that I know Senator Canavan has been very exercised about, a range of projects right across Queensland and a range of projects right across Australia that now actually can proceed because the Albanese government has done the hard work of looking at each of those projects, working out what can be delivered, what there is funding for, what there is a business case for, and which ones, in contrast, had no hope ever of being delivered and were only lines on a press release. That's what we used to get from the National Party in an infrastructure program, not real funding
and
real projects.
Thank you, Minister Watt. The time has expired. Senator Mackenzie, second supplementary.
The Albanese government's Rudd-era policy of reducing federal funding from 80-20 to 50-50 and an arbitrary minimum value of $500 million will mean an immediate and devastating cut for projects across regional Australia. Minister, with road fatalities rising, freight demand ever increasing, why are you cutting infrastructure funding for regional Australia by 30% and making it next to impossible for future projects in the regions to be funded?
Thank you, Senator Mackenzie. Minister Watt.
Well, again, unfortunately, Senator Mackenzie, just because you say it, it doesn't make it true. What we are delivering, again, to give you one example from Queensland, the Bruce Highway, the backbone of our state, what had been promised under your government was close to $10 billion in funding for the Bruce Highway. How much has been committed by the Albanese government? About $10 billion, exactly the same amount of money. And that is the case right across the country. So even with this change towards 50-50 of funding, which has traditionally applied in relation to federal funding of infrastructure projects, what that means is that, to take one example, the Bruce Highway has exactly the same amount of money provided for it as it did yesterday, as it did last year, as it did the year before. And that is replicated across so many other states. So the Albanese government is delivering infrastructure funding.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Senator Mackenzie, I called you and you continued to interject. You are being disrespectful. I'm asking for silence as the minister responds to your question. Minister Watt, please continue.
So again, just to take Queensland as an example, I know that there are projects proceeding under our plans for Cairns, for Cape York, for Normanton, for Burketown, for Townsville, for Rockhampton. They are regional Queensland,
Minister
and they are
Watt,
getting the funding they need.
The time has expired. Senator Scar, I have also called you a number of times today, and your constant interjections are also disorderly, and I'd ask you to stop. Senator Babette.
Thank you, President. My question is for the Minister for Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, Minister Watts. Minister, we've seen the unscientific decisions made by the Western Australian and Victorian state governments to shut down native forestry in their states. Australia is already a net timber importer, and because we'll be producing less timber locally, which countries are Australia going to source their timber floors, timber decks, timber furniture, wood to build houses, etc. from, especially since we're going to be importing so many more migrants? And do these countries practice sustainable forestry, where at least one tree is planted for every tree harvested, as we do currently in Australia?
Thank
so
you,
where's
Senator.
Our wood going to come from? Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Watt.
Thank you, President, and thank you, Senator Babette, for the question. I've obviously been asked questions about forestry on a number of occasions by representatives of the Greens, but I'm welcome questions from other senators on this topic as well. And Senator Babette, the question that you asked goes to what I've said when I've been asked about this issue beforehand, which is that the Albanese government supports a sustainable forestry industry. We support the communities that rely on that industry. And the reality is that the calls from some to eliminate native forestry on a very short timetable would leave us open to exactly the problems that you're talking about, Senator Babette. We are at a point in Australia where around about 87% of our timber and wood needs are met by plantation timber, and that number does seem to be growing. So there are more and more uses for plantation timber. But the reality is that, as things currently stand, we do rely on Australian native forestry to produce a number of products, including some of the home furnishings and other high-grade products that you're talking about, Senator Babette. And if we were to follow the calls of some to eliminate that industry very, very quickly, then that would leave us open to the need for imports from other countries which do have, in general, lower environmental standards to Australia. So what we want to do as the federal government is work with the states, work with the territories, work with industries, work with the community to ensure that we can meet our forestry and timber needs. And that's exactly why, heading into the election, we made around $300 million of commitments to expand the forestry industry, to modernise it, to improve its efficiency, to improve the skill base of its workers, to actually plant more plantations. That's what we want to do, to develop that sustainable forestry industry that all Australians rely on, not to mention the regional communities in particular that depend upon it for their livelihoods and their local economies.
Thank you, Minister. What, Senator Babette, first supplementary.
Thank you, Minister. So the native forest workforce, they're obviously skilled forest firefighters, and they assist our firemen and women in fighting bushfires. Now, in the 2019-2020 fires, 284 forest contractors used 190 harvesting machines to save rural properties and save lives. Since we're shutting down the native industry in Victoria, the timber harvesting industry, what work, if any, is being done by you to help next fire season?
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister Watt.
Thanks, Senator Babette. And your question goes to one of the other reasons that we need to have a sustainable forestry industry, and that is the role that our foresters play in ensuring that forests are maintained in a way that reduces bushfire risk. And that's, of course, a very real risk as we enter this summer in many parts of the country. The work that our foresters do to maintain those forests, preserve bushfire trails and all sorts of other things in our forests, that is critical work to making sure that we do prevent that bushfire risk. And again, if we were to proceed down the path that some are calling for in immediately locking up forests in a way that wouldn't allow for that kind of forest management activity, that does present a risk of increasing the risk of bushfires, something that we need to take seriously. So that's why these matters are not simple matters. They don't work simply as bumper sticker slogans that some are fond of using. We need to actually approach these issues carefully and in a considered manner, and that's what we're doing.
Senator Babette, second supplementary.
Thank you. So last year, the Prime Minister, he made an election commitment to protect the Tasmanian native forest industry. He said, "I promise that if I become Prime Minister, Gub and I lead will not shut down the native forest industry in Tasmania." Why won't the government show the workers in Victoria the same support that they have given in Tasmania? Is it because Tasmania is the last Liberal state? Is that what's going on?
Thank you, Senator Babette. Minister.
Well, Senator Babette, I know you've attempted to transform yourself into Inspector Clouseau by solving the mystery there, but I'm afraid to say that you're incorrect there. You are correct that the Prime Minister did make a commitment to Tasmanian forestry workers and Tasmanian forestry communities heading into the election, that this government would not shut down Tasmania's forestry industry. I can't remember the exact terms of that commitment. And I know that was a commitment that Senator Dunningham welcomed, but more so the Tasmanian senators sitting on this side of the chamber. who very much appreciate the importance of the forestry industry to Tasmania. So that's exactly why we are, as I said before, investing in our forestry industry, because we do want to see it continue. It's not going to remain exactly the same. As I say, there is an increase in plantation timber going on, but we're investing $300 million to modernise this industry, to upskill its workers, to be able to use the higher forms of technology that are coming online, build those plantation estates and continue to undertake native forestry.
Thank you, President. My question is to the Minister representing the Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations, Senator Watt. Last year, those opposite opposed secure jobs, better pay. They just saw the title and they knew they were against it. How is secure jobs and better pay helping ease the cost of living pressure and getting wages moving again?
Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Polly, someone I know who's very interested in ensuring that Australians have secure jobs and better pay, along with every other member over here. What a shame we couldn't find one senator over that side of the chamber. No, you can't put up your hand for that one, Senator Cash. You can't put up your hand for that one. You're not about secure jobs and better pay. You're not about that. And I'm very, Senator Cash, you'll be very pleased to know that the Albanese government has delivered today's ABS labour force figures, which show the unemployment rate remain at historic lows of 3.7%. How about that? That sounds like secure jobs to me, Senator Gallagher. And employment has actually increased by 55,000, exceeding all market expectations. And female employment increased by 37,500. So well done to the Minister for Women, Senator Gallagher, and all others involved in delivering that. Now, the Albanese government does know that a lot of people are doing it tough right now, and that's why we're doing everything we can to get wages moving. Secure jobs, better pay. We were for both, you were for neither. That's why we supported an increase to the minimum wage, not once, but twice. It's why we supported decent pay for aged care workers. And who can remember, so who can forget Senator Colbeck and others muddling their way through about why they couldn't support a pay rise for aged care workers? We remember that. We remember, and you know who else remembers it? The aged care workers. They remember the coalition not supporting a pay rise for some of the hardest working people in our community. And it's also why we passed our secure jobs, better pay legislation, that bit of legislation that was doomed from the coalition's point of view. Whenever we came up with that name for the bill, secure jobs, better pay, two things the coalition is absolutely allergic to. Now, we know that our legislation is getting wages moving again and improving conditions. We do know that Australians are doing it tough. We know we're going to have to keep working hard on this, but by passing that legislation, we're getting wages moving again and creating more jobs, which is exactly what we said we would do.
Thank you, Minister Watt. Senator Polly, first supplementary.
President, despite wages increasing, not everyone is seeing wage growth flow through to them. Some employers are using loopholes to undercut workers' paying conditions. No surprises there. Why do we want to close loopholes that allow people to be underpaid, and how is the Albanese Labor government acting to close these loopholes?
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Polly. Now, I don't know about you, Senator Polly, but I find it pretty appalling that while you were talking about loopholes that are leading to workers losing pay, that we had Senator Rustin, Senator Cash and a number of others over there laughing about that. I don't think it's a laughing matter that workers get ripped off through loopholes left in your legislation. I don't think that's very funny. I think that's a serious matter, and I think it's something that should be rectified. So perhaps you'd like to reconsider your position on that.
Minister Watt, please resume your seat. Order on my left. Order. Minister Watt, please continue.
Thank you, Chair and President. I understand why the opposition is embarrassed every time their refusal to close those loopholes is pointed out. I'm sure, President, that you'd agree that nobody is missing out more than those who are having their wages stolen. And currently, if a worker steals from an employer, it's a crime, as it should be. But if an employer deliberately steals from their worker, in most places in Australia, it is not a crime. That is backwards, ridiculous logic that is being endorsed by the coalition in their refusal to help us pass this legislation. There's never a good time for a pay rise if you're a coalition senator. There is for a Labor senator.
Senator Polly, second supplementary.
President, we know that workers should never have to choose between their safety and their pay. How have the government's actions closed the loopholes, been informed by the lessons of the past? Because Workers know in this country they can rely on us. Those on that side, there's no surprises how they act when they're in government.
Thank you, Senator Polly. Minister Watt.
Thank you, Senator Polly. And again, we hear laughter from the other side when you ask about workers choosing between their safety and their pay. Well, Senator Polly, there are 9 quarters in the history of the wage price index where wage prices have increased by less than 2%. Guess who was in government in every single one of those 9 occasions? That's right, it was the Coalition. The Coalition was in power every time, all of those 9 quarters, when we saw wage prices increase by less than 2%. And I guess that's because they were for once telling the truth when they admitted that low wages was a deliberate design feature of their economic strategy. They delivered. Congratulations, you delivered the low wages that you said that you were dedicated towards. 9 quarters. We know that those opposite don't stand up for workers. We know that low wage growth is a deliberate design feature of their economic architecture. And we know that the previous Liberal and National government did nothing to stop the wage theft epidemic, despite dozens of underpayment scandals on their watch.
Minister Wong.
I ask that further questions be placed on notice, and if